You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
American consumers can now buy hundreds of products, from toilet paper to handguns, branded with the pink ribbon that indicates that a portion of the proceeds from its sale will go towards breast cancer treatment and research. But who benefits most from those pink ribbon campaigns? The women diagnosed with breast cancer or the corporations that participate in them? That's one of the questions at the heart of Pink Ribbon Incorporated, a documentary film that opens tomorrow at the IFC Center here in New York. Joining us now are Ravita Din, the film's producer, Samantha King, the author of Pink Ribbon Incorporated, the book that the film was based on. And also joining us is Anne-Marie Ciccarella, a member of Breast Cancer Action, who says she's been frustrated by what she calls the pink washing of this devastating disease. And I'm very pleased to welcome you all to our show. Ravita, let's begin with you. When did the pink ribbon first become a symbol of the fight against breast cancer?
The history of the pink ribbon, it dates back, I guess, to early 90s. I'm going to have to ask Samantha to help me here with dates. But it actually didn't start out as a pink ribbon at all. It was actually one woman, Charlotte Haley, who decided she wanted to do something about breast cancer that was affecting her family, and she created a peach ribbon, actually. What she asked people to do was to send in this ribbon with a card urging legislators to put more funding into breast cancer prevention.
Because she said she wanted to publicize her concern that the National Cancer Institute was spending only 5% of its funds on the prevention of breast cancer.
That's right. But not long after that, she was contacted by Self Magazine and a cosmetics company who said, "This is interesting. We'd like to use the ribbon in order to talk about breast cancer awareness to our consumers."
So, and she lost control of the campaign, and the color changed.
Well, I'm not sure she lost control, but she stepped away from it.
Mm-hmm.
She said, "I don't agree. I'm not part of that. Your interest in promoting the ribbon is about the bottom line for profits for your products, and that's not what I'm interested in."
And why did they choose pink?
Well, apparently they did some focus group studies and found that many people responded to pink as a comforting, warm, and a benign color.
Mm-hmm. Samantha, I mentioned a couple of the more unlikely products consumers can now buy with a pink ribbon logo on them. What are some of the most prominent ones, and which ones do you find the most egregious?
Well, certainly motor car manufacturers and cosmetics companies have been at the forefront of pink ribbon marketing since its inception. And in both cases, these are products that are linked to the prevalence of cancer. And that's what, as you noted in your introduction, that's what the term pinkwashing reminds us of, is that many of these products that are on the market are actually bad for our health. There are, of course, the extreme examples of the handguns and the oil rigs painted in pink, but I think it's the more mundane, everyday products that we really need to also be aware of.
Do pink ribbon products tend to sell better than other products? Does the pink ribbon actually increase sales?
Well, market researchers have suggested that it does if there are two products that are basically the same and one is offering to give money to a charity and one is not, that consumers are more likely to opt for the charitable product. And, of course, I think the fact that it's hard to find a company, a large corporation that hasn't at some point had a pink ribbon campaign suggests that they really work.
Anne-Marie, you've said that you joined Breast Cancer Action after you learned about the organization's Think Before You Pink campaign. Will you tell us about the campaign and what attracted you to it?
Well, what attracted me to it is the need for consumers to understand we need to be savvy about what we're spending our money on. The pink ribbon is not regulated. So, I don't know about other states, but in New York State, if someone wants to slap a pink ribbon on something and just write the words "for awareness," that's all they need to do, and no money gets sent. So people can be purchasing pink products thinking that there's a donation going somewhere, but unless they read and it specifically says proceeds going to the, they're spending their money on something for to raise awareness for something that really doesn't need to be raised awareness on.
But as we learn from the film, even when proceeds are given to research, it can often be very little money actually being sent. American Express has been called one of the biggest offenders, hasn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. They had a campaign where they were, I think it was dollars for a cure, or and what they did was they were sending a donation based on the use of the card, and whether you went and spent $10 in a convenience store or tens of thousands of dollars on a large purchase item, they sent the same donation, and the donation was one penny.
So a $5,000 airline ticket
got one penny. And BCA was instrumental in having that campaign pulled back.
Now, do we have any idea how much money actually wound up going into...
With the American Express thing specifically, I don't. I wouldn't be able to tell you
that.
Because
pennies can't add up, but...
Yeah, but...
Ravita, your film also explains that Yoplait Yogurt, a company that's been a long-time supporter of breast cancer fundraising events, donates only a dime to a breast cancer charity for each yogurt container lid that's mailed back. That would amount to just $34 sent back if three lids a day were sent during a four-month-long promotion.
That's right.
So it would be easier to just write out a check for $34, wouldn't it?
Well, absolutely, and especially if, consumers want to actually know where and how their money is being spent. I mean, Yoplait is a really interesting example. They've been in partnership with the Komen Group for, 11, 12 years, and they've... As you mentioned, for every pink lid that you send in, Komen will donate 10 cents. But they do cap it, I should mention. They cap the last time I looked at this, they were capping it at 1.5 million. So that actually, so what they actually do is guarantee a donation of about half a million. So that gives you an indication of just how large the profits are from the sale of yogurt.
So have obviously people are going to buy the yogurt because they have heard that Yoplait has been very generous in this area. Have you heard anything about the company's reaction to your film? I would think they'd be a bit embarrassed.
No, not formally. Actually, I haven't heard from any of the companies that are mentioned in the film.
In the film, you do point out that Yoplait stopped using milk to make its yogurt from cows who had been given the growth hormone RBGH to increase their milk production, but they had been using the growth hormone milk before then.
Yes, and in fact, it's BCA, I think, that deserves much of that credit. And as Barbara Brenner speaks to that campaign in the film, it was actually the power of the consumers. I mean, if people write in and say this isn't good enough, I'm not going to buy your product, change actually does happen.
My guests are Ravita Din, who is the producer of a film called Pink Ribbon Incorporated, Samantha King, who wrote the book that the film is based on, and also Anne-Marie Ciccarella, a member of the Breast Cancer Action, an activist group that is trying to deal with the issues that we are discussing. Anne-Marie, the film raises a lot of questions about the many fundraising walks and runs that are organized by foundations connected with Avon, Susan G. B. Komen, Revlon, others. What about those walks and runs? Do they raise a lot of money?
The walks are tremendously expensive to operate. However, I think what happens with the walks, you have the women are participating because there's some sort of a camaraderie. I never participated in a walk. I can only speak to what people say about it. And I think that it's more about mobilizing the community and getting those people to support the whole pink ribbon culture, which, in my opinion, has stifled the progress.
Well, Samantha, you get the feeling that these events are celebratory and everybody is patting themselves on the back for having survived breast cancer with little mention of the people who have died from it.
That's right. And in my research, I've spoken to many women who are living with breast cancer who object to the survivor label for a variety of reasons, but not least because it does suggest or connotate a certain overly optimistic and happy attitude that doesn't describe the experiences of all people with breast cancer. And the film does a really nice job of talking to women in a stage four breast cancer group who talk about their discomfort as they're preparing to die with the breast cancer culture that really only talks about living.
Some breast cancer advocates have said that they believe these fundraising walks and runs distract women from more meaningful advocacy focused on prevention.
Well, certainly that's one of the main points that the film makes, that most of this fundraising is for a cure, and the Komen Foundation, of course, owns the rights to those three words. And what that does is really draw the public's attention towards treatment and diagnosis and screening and away from what actually causes the disease and what we might do to stop it at its roots.
So do you feel that the women who raise thousands of dollars, sleep out in tents and walk 36 miles in a weekend are largely wasting their time?
Well, I'm not sure that they're wasting their time. What I hope is that the film encourages people to change the conversation around the disease and question whether they could channel that same kind of energy and dedication to a different approach towards the disease. We certainly, with all these walks and runs and all the sale of all of these products, have made remarkably little progress in either incidence rates or mortality rates. And I'm not sure that people are aware of that, and that's certainly not the message that they get when they participate in these events.
Anne-Marie?
I'm in such agreement. I was diagnosed in 2006. My mom was diagnosed in 1987. I have her records. So people can try to push progress on me, meaningful progress. I had identical treatment as my mom 20 years later. So where is the progress? There is no progress as far as I'm concerned.
Well, these events are really about raising awareness, but you say you think most people are already aware.
I think that we would be hard pressed to find the corner of the planet where they don't know what pink means.
And I've read that 1 in 8 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer in her lifetime. That means that pretty much everyone has a friend, a relative, or a coworker who has had the disease, or like you, have had it themselves.
Yes. I have to believe it's touched most people on a highly personal level. And the concept of survivor is not only troubling to those stage four patients, the metastatic patients, it's troubling to most of us that are early stage patients, because we all realize that we're not cured. At any point, that survivor label can be stripped. And
well, what percentage of people who develop breast cancer wind up at stage four?
The 30% of early stage breast cancers will go on to become metastatic. And that does not include the percentage of women that are already diagnosed at a metastatic stage.
My guests are Anne-Marie Ciccarella, a member of Breast Cancer Action, Samantha King, the author of a book called Pink Ribbon Incorporated, and Ravita Din, the producer of a film of the same title that opens tomorrow at the IFC Center on the Avenue of the Americas in Greenwich Village. We'll continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. A new film called Pink Ribbon Incorporated is opening tomorrow at the IFC Center here in New York, and Ravita Din is its producer. It's based on a book by Samantha King, who is also with us. And also joining us is Anne-Marie Ciccarella, a member of Breast Cancer Action. We are talking about just how effective the Pink Ribbon campaigns have been. Ravita, where does the money raised at these events and from Pink Ribbon label products go?
you know, I have to say that that was probably one of the most challenging aspects of our research when we were looking at the actual distribution of funds. It took us a long time, and even with close to 6 months of full-time research after we had already spent 2 years researching for the film, it was still a little unclear. What you actually have to do is mine through annual reports to try and get a sense. But what we did come to understand was that a very large amount of money is spent on awareness and lifestyle issues, promoting better lifestyles for women.
Positively and things like that?
Yeah, and diet, you know, preoccupation with diet and lifestyle, which that in itself is a bit disturbing, because what it does is it puts the responsibility squarely on individual women for their cancers. We found that less than 5% is spent on looking at prevention, what causes the disease.
A lot of it is spent on refining treatments that are already in place and research techniques that are already in place.
Yeah, there's a lot of money going to research. I mean, we hear that all the time when people participate in a lot of the runs and races, not only, as Samantha said, you know, people are being told that you're running because it's to find a cure, but it's money going to research. And you know, there's a message that's been sold to women that this disease is so complex and it's so diverse, which is true, but what it means is that we are constantly being made to feel that we need to throw money at research. What we found, again, in some of the research we did, and certainly the extraordinary women that we spoke to in the film, that a lot of this research remains uncoordinated. There are so many groups involved in fundraising and looking at research, but they're not talking to each other. So there's duplication.
Mention was made earlier about possible environmental factors as causes of breast cancer, chemicals, plastics, other environmental hazards. And you mentioned Ford Motor Company being one of the funders who featured in the film. Is it more difficult to study whether breast cancer is linked to air pollution if the study is being paid for by a car company?
Well, I would think that it would be. I mean, what are you actually going to do when you have a company like Ford, in the case of Komen, giving them close to, I believe in 2010, more than $100 million towards research, you know, through the sale of Warrior Mustangs cars, right, from which they were contributing $500 for each purchase. You're not necessarily going to be encouraged to look at the link, for example, between polycyclic hydrocarbons, you know, which are known to be a class of chemicals that are linked to breast cancer.
Samantha, the film looks at a couple of instances in which the conflict of interest is so apparent, you have to wonder how it could have been overlooked, like the partnership launch between the Susan G. Komen Foundation and Kentucky Fried Chicken. Can you tell us about the Pink Bucket campaign and how it ended?
Yes, well, that's right. So a couple of years ago, Pink Buckets of Cure appeared on the marketplace with Pink Buckets of Chicken for the Cure, with the promise that a percentage of the sale price would go to the Komen Foundation. And I believe it was, nutritionists initially who began to question this, and they got in touch with Breast Cancer Action that launched a very smart campaign called What the Cluck, and encouraged people to write to the Komen Foundation and ask them why they were partnering with a company that makes food that is bad for people. And the campaign disappeared. So again, it showed the power of activism. But I think that was also, for me, an example of really the Komen Foundation losing sight of its core vision, that they would even contemplate such a partnership in the first place was quite mind-boggling.
If I can add, what's actually even more startling for me is that in that two-month campaign, it was Komen actually received its single largest donation in history. They received a check for $4.2
million. From Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Yes. Yeah.
was Komen got into trouble because of their cutting off funds to Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood was using the money in fighting breast cancer. Was that, were their approaches effective? Was that money well spent?
Sorry, was the money, the Planned Parenthood money, well spent?
Yes.
The Komen Foundation funds many important programs, screening and treatment through third parties like Planned Parenthood. So it's, at least from my perspective, it's not that all the money being raised is being wasted, but I think what the public needs to understand is that the Komen Foundation, while it provides and funds some important services, its overall mission and strategy does not support women's health. They actively have opposed, you know, extending universal health care benefits, environmental legislation, and so on. And I think people need to understand that contradiction in their practices.
A listener, Dan, in the Bronx, left this comment on our show page. He said, I was in a deli this morning in the Bronx and saw a sign from a deli meat company that said that a percentage of sales would go to Susan G. Komen and breast cancer research. In the picture, they had shaped the bacon strips into the breast cancer ribbon symbol.
I guess
that's something that seems funny, doesn't it?
Well, it's actually at the height of absurdity, isn't it? I mean, today you can't actually turn without seeing a pink product, and when you start seeing it on gasoline and bottles of wine and handguns, you wonder how far it's going to go.
And because the pink ribbons have become ubiquitous in our society, we are looking at just how effective they are now. It's the subject of a documentary called Pink Ribbons Incorporated, which opens tomorrow at the IFC Center. And with us are its producer, Ravita Din, Samantha King, who wrote the book that the film is based on, and Anne-Marie Ciccarella, who's a member of Breast Cancer Action. And Anne-Marie, in your case, three women in your immediate family, you, your mother, and your younger sister have developed breast cancer. So how much do doctors understand about the role that genetics play in the development of breast cancer?
The fact of the matter is, I believe it's 10% or less are genetically based.
So it's a small percentage.
Small percentage. So
they don't think it's worth their time.
No, well, I was genetic tested, and the test came back inconclusive.
Mm-hmm.
I did not match my mom, so clearly I did. You know, there's no known genetic link.
But okay, so your mother had treatment,
right?
19 years before you did.
Correct.
How different was your treatment from hers?
Identical. She had surgery, followed by chemotherapy, followed by an estrogen suppressant medication that they're still using today. I had the same surgery, the same exact chemotherapy drugs. The only difference is hers were pushed and mine were dripped in an IV line.
And you say that you feel that you're still suffering some long-term effects from the chemotherapy?
Absolutely.
How's your mother doing?
My mom is great. My mom actually had a second primary a year after me, and 20 years after her first diet. So there's actually four cases of breast cancer among three, me, mom, and my sister.
Do any of you have an idea of how much money the government is actually investing in breast cancer research? Is all this private fundraising necessary or helpful?
I could speak to that. The U.S. government still provides the large bulk of research funding for breast cancer, which is also something I don't think that the public necessarily understands. And one of my concerns is that all this focus on corporate sponsorship and private individual fundraising might suggest that the government doesn't have a responsibility for funding research.
Ravita, Dr. Susan Love, one of the country's most highly respected breast cancer specialists, told you that she stopped accepting patients after she became frustrated with the breast cancer treatments available, which are surgery, radiation, chemotherapy. She called that slash, burn, and poison. So she has decided to focus her efforts on the prevention of breast cancer. Is much of the money going into research to look into the area of prevention?
You know what? I actually don't know the details of her research. She has partnered with Avon, interestingly enough, and we did in the interview speak to her a little bit about whether there were any concerns about aligning with yet another cosmetic company and if it hindered her in her work. But, you know, she was very, very quick to respond and say, listen, I know what I want to do. I know the kind of research that I want to do. She's working, you know, with women in a way, actually, as a test group. And she said, I'm going to go where the money is. So that's one attitude. And you know, Dr. Love, who's done an extraordinary amount of work in terms of women's health, also said, you know, I'm not convinced there are environmental links. She was more inclined to think that it could be related to a virus. So I think that some of the research is focused on that.
Well, part of the problem is that it's impossible to cure a disease if you don't understand what's causing it.
Exactly.
Emery?
That's Dr. Love's exact point of view. We need to understand the cause so that we can find a solution.
Several women interviewed in the film who'd struggled with breast cancer, including the writer Barbara Ehrenreich, said that they found the pink ribbon culture oppressive. Isn't its message that if women are optimistic and upbeat and if they fight hard enough, they can win the fight? There's a lot of talk about winning the fight against breast cancer. She said also that she had a problem with using language that compares having breast cancer to being engaged in a war with and using the term survivor for women who didn't die from the disease. Do you all find that language objectionable?
It is objectionable. It's objectionable because it places blame on women whose disease recurred as if they had control, if they had exercised more, if they had changed their diet slightly, maybe this would not have happened. And that's simply not the case. There's nothing that anyone can do to prevent themselves from a recurrence. We can engage in healthy lifestyles and make good choices, but that does not buy you a get-out-of-cancer-free card.
I also, I loved Barbara Ehrenreich's article, and in fact, it was really the spark that first led to the idea of doing a documentary film. I had just come out of my own treatment for breast cancer, and it wasn't until I read Barbara's Welcome to Cancerland, and she described how patronizing and infantilizing the whole pink ribbon culture is.
She's developed a distaste for the color pink.
Yes, absolutely.
Because pink's the color associated with little girls and princesses.
Yeah, you know, including you can buy teddy bears and all those feel-good things. And, you know, if you're not smiling and happy, the message that's being sent to women is, well, you're just not, you know, trying hard enough, which, you know, we all know, especially those who've been treated for breast cancer, has absolutely nothing to do with it.
Now, Ravita, some of the most moving sections of the film are the interviews with members of a support group for women suffering from stage 4 breast cancer. And didn't some of these women tell you they feel unwelcome in other breast cancer support groups because they're designed to help women live with breast cancer while these women need to prepare to die?
Yeah, and you know, they talk about what it means for them as they are actually learning how to die. And when you do look at the need for support groups and women who seek them out, it's about coping with a disease or going through a treatment. It's interesting, you know, for me personally, I was even cautioned by an oncologist in terms of seeking out a support group and said, listen, you know, there are going to be women who are going to be at very different stages of treatment or of the cancer itself, and it may not be helpful, you know, to you in terms of where you sit. So I'm sure there are women who would receive a lot of support, but certainly the women from stage 4 were saying, when you've actually arrived at stage 4, there are very few places to go. And, you know, they also talk about not feeling welcome at some of the fundraising walks because you are seen as the angel of death.
The metastatic patients, in my opinion, that's the pink ribbon's dirty little secret. It's like we want them to go away. I don't mean we, because I'm not part of that we. But they take away from the message of hope and the message of we can all beat this. We're all going to survive. The fact is, we're not all going to survive.
I'm going to end this with something from a listener, Paula in New Jersey. This topic is quite significant to me. Tomorrow marks the 5th anniversary of my mother's passing from breast cancer. I can't agree more about the pink ribbon issue. It was with my own research that I advocated for myself to be tested for the gene, which now supposedly makes me 80% more likely to develop the disease. My aunt and I are advocating locally for prevention and to spread information to give women the power to ask for these tests when they have had a significant family history. Personally, pink has done nothing to make me aware of anything to prevent the disease. I hope more women like yourselves will advocate on behalf of all of us. And we have been talking about a new film called Pink Ribbon Incorporated that opens tomorrow at the IFC Center on Avenue of the Americas in Greenwich Village. I forgot to mention that it's directed by Leah Poole. Its producer is Ravita Din, who is the executive producer of the National Film Board's Quebec and Atlantic Production Centers. Samantha King is the author of Pink Ribbons Incorporated, published by the University of Minnesota in 2006. She's an associate professor at the School of Kinesiology. And Health Studies, Cultural Studies Program at Queen's University in Canada. And Anne-Marie Ciccarella is a member of Breast Cancer Action. I thank you all so much for being on our show today.
Thank you
so much.